Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. It's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm Roxana. And though when you listen to this, it might be cooler than it is right now as I'm recording, but I have noticed we are in times of healthy river flows, clouds of yellow pollen billowing from the pines, lightning shows better than any screens, and birds and bees living up to their reputations. Summer has come with its long days for now. This week, our first Desert Oracle Radio episode was released by Ken Lane, June 11th, 2021. It's about survival and persistence, which I think is quite relevant to these present days. Here is When Everything Goes Wrong.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The good old American desert, may it forgive us of our sins. On the news for a good chunk of the Southwest this coming week, is the heat. Just got this off the wire, might as well read it. From the National Weather Service, excessive heat warning remains in effect from 10 a.m. Monday to 8 p.m. Friday. Wow, that's all of next week. Dangerously hot conditions with high temperatures of 108 to 116 in many locations on Monday. Then increasing 2 to 3 degrees on both Tuesday and Wednesday and holding through at least Friday. Temperatures are likely to exceed 120 degrees by Wednesday in locations such as the Colorado River Valley and Death Valley National Park. The extreme heat will reach portions of northwest Arizona, southeast California, and southern Nevada. Extreme heat will significantly increase the potential for heat-related illnesses, particularly for those working or participating in outdoor activities. Drink plenty of fluids, stay in an air-conditioned room, stay out of the sun, and check up on relatives and neighbors. Young children and pets should never be left unattended in vehicles under any circumstances. Take extra precautions if you work or spend time outside. When possible, reschedule strenuous activities to early morning or evening. Know the signs and symptoms of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Wear lightweight and loose-fitting clothing when possible. To reduce risk during work, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration recommends scheduling frequent rest breaks in shaded or air-conditioned environments. Anyone overcome by heat should be moved to a cool and shaded location. Heat stroke is an emergency, so call 911 if somebody's got the heat stroke. Good advice for anybody dealing with the extreme heat anywhere on the planet, but it is punishing out here, and yes, it's still technically springtime, but in reality, by mid-late June, we know it's all over. And if you need some encouragement to be prepared when you're out and about in the desert wilds, recall that writer Claire Nelson made international headlines in 2018 after she plummeted over 25 feet in a hiking accident, which left her immobilized and alone in the wilderness with no way to call for help. hours became days. And her rescuers had not expected to find her alive. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. We are joined by telephone from across the sea by Claire Nelson, a name you may have heard before on this program, because her story has turned into, well, first an international news sensation, and lately a new book that's now out in the U.S., Things I Learned from Falling, published by Harper One. Claire, welcome to Desert Oracle Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's exciting.
The last time I saw you was the only time I'd ever seen you in person, which was in my house.
It's a true story.
It seems like about 15 years ago, but it was pretty much just before the pandemic. It was a year and a half ago, not quite. And it was a Christmas party, and people were coming in and out, and I had never met you. I think we talked on social media or email or something. And I thought, what fun. All these people are here, and I've just moved into this compound, and I'm going to have parties like this every couple of weeks. And that was the last one. Were you here for what on that trip? Was that just come back and see friends you knew around here, or was it research? Or
it was just coming back to revisit the desert to see the friends that I have there. And my mother had come over to the States for Christmas, and she wanted to see the desert where, you know, everything went down. So it was kind of a, you know, showing her the sights as well.
They returned to the scene of the crime.
Exactly.
Your adventure happened in 2018. What time of year was it?
It was end of May. So just about 3 years ago, exactly.
A lot of people come out here at the end of May and they think, oh, it's springtime, is very mild weather. You sort of learned differently, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Thank goodness it wasn't any later in the year, but boy, that was as hot as you'd want it, as you'd be able to kind of still enjoy the desert, but obviously not in my situation.
Claire, if you had 30 seconds to describe the book without giving away the good parts, what would you say?
Ooh, it's a book about survival, and it's a book about fear and how those instincts are misplaced. And it's through the lens of surviving 4 days injured in Joshua Tree Desert and also surviving modern-day burnout and anxiety.
Now, the modern day burnout is sort of what brought you here, is that correct?
Yes. I was living in London, and yeah, I think when you live in a big city like this and you're someone who needs to connect to nature, I just got to the point where I'm like, I had to get out, and I just went, I kind of hid for the hills, you know. I went to North America and went looking for some solitude and really in the most remote places I could find.
And this wasn't your first trip to Joshua Tree, is that correct?
I'd been to Joshua Tree once before, but it was a very brief 24-hour trip. I'd come to California for a wedding with some friends, and we did a little kind of quick pit stop in Joshua Tree, and I was determined to go back at some point. I have a real thing with, well, deserts, but with anywhere that's, you know, very remote wilderness. It's just, I feel very at ease there, and I was like, I need to come back to this place at some point.
What did you think you were going to get out of it? Were you kind of looking for some guidance with what you were going to do next, or?
I knew something had to change in my life. I hadn't figured out what that was going to be. I just knew two things were true in life for me. One was that I felt safest on my own, and that I felt happiest in the outdoors. So I thought if I just kind of focus on doing those two things, and then maybe the rest will become clear. And admittedly, I ended up in Joshua Tree. I was there to house sit for some friends there who lived out there. And I mean, I'd started out in Canada and ended up down in California. But at the end of the day, it was kind of just trying to go from one remote wilderness to another and hike and be outside as much as I could be.
We're on the air in Joshua Tree, so a lot of people know the park fairly well, and a lot of our listeners have been through here. What part of the park were you in?
I was in the very southern side of the park in the lower Colorado on the Lost Palms Oasis Trail, which I'd heard things about and was extremely intrigued, partly because it was like a full day trip with, you know, the drive right across the park and then the sort of 4 miles in each way, in and out. But the fact that there were these palm trees at the end of it, which sort of felt like you were going towards a treasure, you know, like there was something at the end of it.
This is a very good illustration that a lot of people have a hard time with, especially when they're only on the north side of the park, the Mojave section where the Joshua trees are. Even though it's not the biggest national park around, it's very different on the north and south sides. How would you describe the differences between the Mojave and the Colorado Desert sides of the national park?
The most obvious difference is that once you get into the south side of the park, you don't have the Joshua trees anymore. And so kind of all of the flora is really, it's much lower to the ground. Also, the landscape's much more rocky. There's a lot more kind of valleys and boulders, and it's kind of more gritty. And the temperature seems to get a lot hotter there as well. So it's almost like it's a different park.
And at that time of the year, I think that's when we start seeing fewer visitors and people on the trail in the south side simply because it's hotter. What were the conditions like when you headed out on what was supposed to be a nice day hike?
It was hot. I mean, it was, to my mind, perfect hiking conditions. You know, clear blue sky, very warm. I set out early and I actually left. I decided to go on a Tuesday morning because I figured there'd be fewer visitors in the park, which at the time, that seemed like a really good idea. So I wanted the trail all to myself. Foolish, foolish me.
For a lot of us, an empty trail is a delight because we've got what we came for. We've got nature, the sounds of nature. We're not listening to other people argue and jabber and listen to music on their phones or whatever. And
right
after your fall and your 4 harrowing days, you had nature all to yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, that was exactly what I'd come for. And I was like, great, I've got it.
When you went missing, the issue seemed to be that nobody around here knew about it. Is that the case?
Yeah. Considering the fact that I was there to house it for people who weren't there, I just started to meet people who didn't really know me. So, you know, I didn't have any real connections or ties to anyone in Joshua Tree who were present. And I hadn't told anyone where I was going, which is obviously the biggest number one hiking mistake. And no one was expecting me back.
The book goes into interesting detail about how this happened. It ended up being one of our global enemies, social media, right? That eventually sounded the alarm.
Yeah. I always feel so embarrassed to say that it was sort of, the fact that I was so quiet on Instagram was what made people notice that maybe I wasn't all right. But, you know, I think that's a really big signal that I had let social media kind of be the my main form of connecting with people, my main line of communication to friends and family and people. So, of course, that was the only way people were going to tell that something had happened.
And once it was noticed, it was people out of the United States who sounded the alarm locally. Is that correct?
Yeah, the friends I was house sitting for who weren't in the States, they had their friends come round and check on the house, and they noticed that I wasn't there. And so then they sounded the search and rescue alarm. And then my car, my friend's car was that I was driving, was found at the trailhead. And so it was kind of all the pieces were put together. But I'm still kind of in awe of the fact that it even happened.
Some of our people who vanish from trails in this desert park and in parks throughout the Southwest and wilderness areas, their car at the trailhead is often the clue that eventually leads them to being discovered more often dead than alive.
Right.
But in your case, your car was there at the trailhead for 4 days and nights?
Yeah, four days, three nights.
And yet it still took your real-world friends on social media to connect a car left at a trailhead with the person that was in it.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of us solo hikers, and I include myself, we assume if we don't come back and get the car by the next morning or something, that the search and rescue teams will be out and the helicopters and everything else. And that, I think that's one of the more baffling parts of your predicament there, is that well-known fail-safe did not work.
Yeah, and I get asked about that, a reasonable amount. I don't know how else it could be improved upon, because, I mean, for all anybody knew, I could be, off on one of the campsites in the area. And so a part of me hoped that maybe after one night, the car would be kind of a signal that someone had been there overnight, but with campsites in that area as well, it was like, well, no one's going to assume the worst so soon. I did stop in at the ranger station, at the visitor center, and talk to a ranger there about the trail. And they knew I was hiking it, but there was no log of that. And I didn't inquire whether there was a log of that, because of course I'm not even thinking about there being any danger at that point.
And you hike a lot around the world? You're pretty comfortable in different terrains and different climates? You weren't expecting a harrowing trip.
No, not at all. I mean, this is the thing. I was kind of feeling more relaxed and more confident at that point in time in that place than I did in my life back in London. So the kind of the little thrill of warning signs and the little red flags saying danger, like none of that was there. Which I think just, it comes with being confident and comfortable. And when you get comfortable, you kind of forget that there are still risks involved.
And unlike a lot of our visitors who've gotten into trouble or been found months or years later dried up on the trail, you had been hiking daily or close to daily during your time when you were house sitting here.
Yeah, I was going out on small hikes, not in the park, but in the desert around the park, most of the days that I was there. But that particular day was my first hike inside the national park on my own. I'd been on hikes in the park before, but that was the first time alone inside the park. And in a way, I think there's, again, that false sense of security when you think, I'm in a national park. This is a place where visitors come every day. It kind of removes another layer of that risk radar,
Yeah, we have that in Yosemite, for example, where most of the fatalities that happen in Yosemite happen at the most peopled trails and attractions in the whole valley.
Wow.
Because there's lots of people there, and there is a sense of security when there's signs. I've been told ever since I was a kid how crucial it is to let a ranger know before you go on a solo hike. I've almost never done it, but that's always been the thing I was told. You did exactly that.
Yeah, I know better as well. I mean, I'm from New Zealand, and the number of times you read in the paper in New Zealand that someone's gone hiking in the bush and the weather has turned and they've got, into serious trouble. And I've always gone, gosh, don't they know any better? You're supposed to tell someone where you're going. And so that's why when I got into trouble myself, the first thought I had was, well, you're an idiot. Like, I was very aware of the fact that I'd made that massive mistake.
But yet you had checked in with a ranger. Your car was in the lot where you went on your hike. These are things that I've been told, that I've overheard rangers telling people at a trailhead, especially obvious tourists or people with little kids or whatever their likely weakness in their plan. With all the things that you did do right going in, those systems failed on the other side.
Yeah.
The false security, I mean, I've certainly felt this going to places where I haven't been before or I don't know very well. I'll go in and talk to somebody, usually trying to find out some inside dirt. I've heard there's a little miner's cabin up here. Where is it? Or where might I see some desert tortoises this month? With the sense that, oh, you checked in.
Right.
You've got lots of this in the book, but can you give a little idea of moments when you were aware of your place in that remote environment?
Yeah. There was a strange moment on the third night when I'd gone through what, in hindsight, what I would have, I realized I'd gone through those stages of grief, you know, like anger and depression and denial. And then I sort of reached acceptance and I kind of, it was a really peaceful night. And I had this really nice moment when I thought, well, okay, if I'm going to die anywhere, like I can't think of a better place. And I sort of felt like I could see, I saw some bats in the rocks above me and I was fascinated just watching them. And I was like, this is kind of nice. Like now the wildlife's coming out. They're not, they know I'm not a threat. You know, I've been here long enough and I've just kind of started to merge with the landscape. You know, I've kind of become part of the furniture. And that felt really nice, I have to say. But despite obviously the dyness of the situation, it wasn't the worst feeling.
It's something Edward Abbey writes about in Desert Solitaire when he and a search party find someone who has died on a day hike. But he was, when he was found, he was sitting underneath a juniper tree in the shade, looking out at this just beautiful view of the canyon country, the slick rock country. And Abbey theorizes, of course, he wasn't there. He's just one of the strong backs they sent out to bring the body back. That there must have been peace and appreciation of the beauty after whatever panic and accidents had led to that situation. But it's something that so few people ever have a chance to report back on, because it's usually, like you say, a last stage, a acceptance.
Wow.
In a sense, it's like a near, well, I guess it is. Of course, it's a near-death experience, but were you conscious when you were found?
Barely. I think because I'd hit the acceptance stage, that last day I was really weak, because I definitely believe, especially after this experience, that where the mind goes, the body will follow. So I'd just become really weak, very dehydrated, and I was sort of drifting in and out of what I would describe as a fever dream. And so it was really just, I'd heard something, and it kind of come into, you know, when you hear a sound when you're asleep and it enters your dream, it was like that. But it sort of snapped me into consciousness, and that was kind of a lifesaver.
When I first saw your story going around the high desert here, the thing that was so striking was something that a lot of tourists almost never, ever consider, especially tourists from other countries, which is that if you're injured during your ordeal, now there's a whole new ordeal.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Your completely reasonable, rational fear of the healthcare system in the United States.
Oh, yeah. That was an eye-opening experience.
You come through this fantastic adventure, and all of a sudden, the most banal daily world horror greets you in our local hospital, High Desert Medical Center. Can you tell us when your first realization was that you were now in a whole different can of worms?
Well, it didn't happen immediately because I had travel insurance. And I want to preface this by saying that I used to work in the travel industry and I had a long-held belief that travel insurance was a form of gambling. So I often didn't take it out. And this one trip I had taken it because I was so afraid of being bitten by a rattlesnake. I'd heard that the antivenin's really expensive. So I made sure I had unlimited medical coverage, thankfully. And so when I first was in hospital, I was like, thank goodness for that. I'm covered, and my insurance company confirmed that I was covered for all of the costs involved with, you know, the urgent medical treatment. But it was, I think I'd been in hospital about 18 days, and they were trying to medevac me back to Canada. And then my insurance company decided that they actually didn't want to pay out. And they said they were only going to pay out, I think it was $20,000, which wasn't even one day in a hospital.
Good God.
And it was Canadian. So my friends had to literally come and remove me from the hospital immediately, which I'm ever grateful to them for that. And, you know, it was just, I was like, that was, then that was kind of when everything started to really, or like PTSD started to kick in, and anxiety and panic and having to manage my own pain. And because I'm managing my own pain, I'd never really heard of Percocet before and didn't really understand what dangers that came with. So self-medicating, and you know, it took the best part of that, well, it basically took the rest of that year and then some to get the insurance company to admit that they were liable for those costs, and they did start to pay out. But you never know what your bill is going to come to. No one tells you. No one, you know, a doctor pulled me aside and said, just so you know, there is no price list. You will just get sent a figure at some point. And that was scary. And I think in the end, I was still getting the bill receipts from the insurers like over a year later, and all in all, it would have been about $500,000 just for the hospital portion of my recovery.
The book is called Things I Learned from Falling. It's out now. It's a hell of a story. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from our headquarters in Joshua Tree. The podcast is always available. Just make sure you download it before traveling the backcountry. You can go by one boulder and there's no more cell phone service, and there goes your security blanket. Our security blanket here on the show is provided by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, who composes and performs the soundscapes you hear during the program. And your host, that's me, has a story in the new Palm Springs Noir, which is a desert crime collection from Akashic Books. Next week, I'll be able to tell you about our July performances. We just got to clear it with the governor of California. We're expecting an announcement June 15. So until then, enjoy your hot desert week. Please don't leave your dog or your cat or your kids or your spouse in the hot car outside, and enjoy the respite of the night. Just put a chair underneath the swamp cooler and deal with it all like a pro. Because we want to talk to you next week as well. So thanks for listening. You can find out more about us at desertoracle.com. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM, and streaming online at kgvm.org. How is summer going for you? Well, I hope it's better than the title of this next episode. From June 18th, 2021, here is Straight to Hell.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The desert at its most brutal. The punishing desert, the earthly purgatory, the sun-blasted wilderness so many heroes had to get across alive or die trying. Moses, Lawrence of Arabia, C-3PO and R2-D2, Beavis and Butthead, Alan Quartermain, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And now we are the heroes, just for surviving, just for surviving the day. It's so hot, the propane guy was out here to check for a leak and said he'd have to turn off the gas until the new valve came in. I think he bid for it on eBay as we were talking about it. And I said, yeah, shut it off. Who cares? The water heater's outside anyway. It'll stay plenty hot. The cold is hot enough. It's that time of year. When it doesn't matter if the little C and the little H is on the right spigot. And I'm sure not using the oven until October. The clothes dry in about a minute and a half. Sometimes they don't even need to make it onto the clothesline. You're about to hang these dish towels or whatever, and well, they're already dry. Maybe just leave the gas off. Who cares? Come back in October. The machinery is old around here. I'm going to replace it all with electric, clean burning solar all the way. Cannot count on the power grid. It's breaking down nationwide. It can't handle the heat in the summer, the cold in the winter. Best to stop using the natural gas, too, as that's not very helpful. Because we've got this little problem happening every year and all the time. For such is our destiny to live in such times. But whenever I get a little bit down about it all, the rising temperatures and the collapsing power grids, the rising oceans and the dried up lakes and rivers, I try to do some attitude adjustment, as Hank Williams Jr. sang, and think about how far we've come on this stuff in a relatively short time. Very young people are rightly impatient and justifiably furious when some 90-year-old president or senator or CEO claims we are making rapid progress. But there's also the well-known phenomenon of accelerating time as you get older. It usually comes right as you sort of get it together, when your path becomes a little more well-defined, still fraught with adventure, but now you're approaching it with a little more confidence. Now and then, anyway. Hopefully. Sometimes confidence is just getting used to what you already are. Recognizing it. And
recognizing it as a well-functioning component of you, yourself. When you get yourself out of the way a little bit, it's you, but it's somebody else too. The part of yourself that's always there, usually on deep background. As they like to say on the investigations desk. And by that time, the months fly by like the pages of a calendar in an old cartoon, blowing away and across an intolerably hot, windswept desert. And 20 years goes by like the first half of 10th grade. But this August weather in mid-June is not something I am particularly thrilled to welcome. No thank you. Come back in. Oh, how about August? It's just too much and it's too early and no thank you. We don't want the heat dome in mid-June. That's not good. Just an intolerable situation, and we're going to have to do something about the management. Out at 8 o'clock and it's still 100 degrees. The dog's looking at me like, what did you do? And I say, look, I did not do it. But of course I did, my species anyway. The dogs just went along for the ride. It would be nice to blame them. You're the one who always wanted to get in the car and stick your head out the window when the AC was on. But it's not their fault. If dogs had a vote, all the dogs would vote for plentiful water, plentiful open space, and fantastic weather for dogs all year round. We can deal with that kind of weather, the 100 degrees at night, when it's supposed to happen. For a few miserable days on the seasonal calendar in the desert, we can deal with that when the highest temperatures and the monsoons and that whole wild season arrives when it's supposed to every year. But we do not want 120 and breaking records in 4 states, and we sure don't want that in mid-June. No, thank you. I don't want to alarm anybody, but we're not doing great overall. Now, granted, we're still at the golf courses in Phoenix arguing against a 3% reduction in their water usage. So we're not quite at the Mad Max level for most people. But we're also not immeasurably far off. And you could probably make some money betting on a date in the next decade or two. Which is why the boomers especially are not all that worried. Because they know in their hearts that they will be the exact distance they want to be away from Judgment Day. Safely dead of old age. Out of harm's way. But even in the tough times, there is beauty. There is magic. I gave the dog some more water, and the sky went from purple to bluish black. The nearly half moon providing just enough light to sort of see where we were going. Going in the direction of that great horned owl, hooting from a juniper branch up on the banks of the dry wash, little bats flitting and diving around us. We sit under a desert willow for a spell and take in the night. It's down to maybe 96 now, but there's a breeze moving down the wash, rustling what's left of the blossoms on the willow. A week ago, this whole tree was covered in blossoms, pink and white with little specks of yellow. Busy with hummingbirds and bees. Now the blossoms are scorched and dried up and falling. No fragrance left in them. As happens every summer. A little early this year, of course. I watched the radio tower blinking on the mountain a few miles away. The trickle of passenger jets some 20,000 feet above us headed west in slow descent. We walk another mile or so, and we turn around, don't want to push it. The dog has already had enough. The owl swoops down low before us, maybe 20 feet ahead of us, too far away to tell if it caught whatever was scrambling across the sand. But I get a good look at the owl's silhouette between me and the hazy half moon. In the days and the months to come, you will be fed a lot of stuff about UFOs. That used to be the kind of thing we sort of specialized in here at Desert Oracle Radio. But now it is in the news cycle all the time. Everybody wants in on it. J.J. Abrams is going to make a UFO documentary for a streaming service. The federal government is going to release some type of vague nonsense in the coming days that some people will get very excited about. The Pentagon and the defense contractors are going to want a lot more money for the new threat. And all this will utterly ignore what actually happens in the skies at night. What happens and what has happened to people who live close to nature since time out of mind. No cable news host or senator or retired pop star is going to tell you anything real or anything true or anything that matches the experience of being passed over by an immense, silent vision that melts into the stars.
Believing they'd find me. With my fouled up leg, I knew I couldn't find them. Then I heard the sound of the chopper. At first I thought my mind was playing tricks on me. I'd been afraid of this all along. But it was up there all right, and heading right for me. I tried to wave and yell. I felt myself blacking out. But they saw me. The next thing I remember was Sergeant Carey coming down the hoist.
You are different from all others mentally and emotionally, but physically just about the same. When your body is supplied with the essentials of life, growth and repair processes function normally, and sufficient energy is created to enable you to perform efficiently. But when the body is deprived of even one of the essentials, water for example, your physical and mental capabilities decrease, and eventually, if corrective measures are not taken...
This is the desert. No one can deny its fantastic beauty. And no one can deny that men have died here alone, through ignorance. Ignorance not only of practical measures to take, but ignorance of how much stress their bodies could endure. Sometimes they discovered this too late. About one-fifth of the land area of the world is desert. The odds against an emergency over desert terrain are in your favor, but it could happen. What then will you be up against? Mainly two things, an excess of heat and a scarcity of water. And without water, you cannot survive for long. For a simple explanation of this, let's take a look at you, simplified. Your normal body temperature is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Excess heat absorbed or generated by the body is dissipated. And you will continue to sweat as long as the need exists to hold body temperature down. In desert areas, the amount of sweat produced can be considerable. This is also true in humid environments where incomplete evaporation interferes with heat dissipation. But the bulk of sweat is water, and every bit of it must be replaced, because every bit of it is needed for normal bodily functions. If it is not replaced, your body will go into debt for water by withdrawing water from vital parts. When the bloodstream gives up water, the blood becomes thicker and less in volume. The heart has to work faster to pump the thickened blood through the arteries and veins. And as water loss continues, it becomes increasingly difficult for your body to function. Approximately 2/3 of the human body is water. This level must be maintained if you are to live, work, and think at peak efficiency. When this water level begins to drop, you become thirsty and uncomfortable. You begin to move in a kind of slow motion. You have no appetite. As you lose more water, you get sleepy. Your temperature goes up. You get irritable. Eventually, you become nauseous. Dizziness, difficulty in breathing, and a tingling sensation in the arms and legs follow. When your body has lost only 10% of its body weight in water, you can't move about normally. At this point, locating a water source may be impossible. And when water loss continues, death is inevitable.
Not a very happy thought, is it? Well, let's see what you can do to keep the worst from happening. Conserve your sweat, not your water. Drink all you want, as long as it's available. Stay in the shade, off the ground. Ground temperature may be 150 degrees or higher, even here. Travel only at night. Move slowly. Take it easy. Now, this doesn't surprise you, does it? But wait. Let's raise the temperature 15 degrees, not too uncomfortable. Raise the temperature 20 degrees, increase the wind to 43 miles an hour, and again, exposed flesh will freeze, but it could be only 30 seconds under more extreme conditions such as these. Except that part which says, get warm, get warm, get warm, get warm. Yes, get warm and stay warm. The most sensible idea you could have. But it takes more than an idea. It takes know-how. Knowing how
every living cell has the ability to burn more heat is then generated.
If you must exercise or move about, avoid sweating. Sweating increases loss of body heat. If you sweat or get warm, ventilate your garments. And keep your mind on survival. This is good advice. Anywhere, anytime. Obviously, food aversion is not an obstacle here. If it was, it's been surmounted. And if this makes a vegetarian out of you, there's always this. It is evidenced by a lack of staying power, a short temper, impatience, and a tendency to magnify minor troubles. Don't let your imagination run away with you. To accomplish this, you must be able to separate the real from the unreal. Apathy and irrational behavior are common. You can expect this to happen. But even when you're alone, you have a good chance of shaking it. Fear. Fear is a natural response to isolation, remoteness, loneliness, and the other psychological stresses. He was in an alien environment, and he was afraid. But he didn't let fear take away his will to live.
From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree. I'm your host, Ken Lane. The soundscapes on this program are composed and performed by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And despite the heat, we are going to go ahead and return to the stage in July. July 10th and 11th, that's Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. at Theater 29 in 29 Palms, California. That's near the east entrance to the national park, near the casino and the inn at 29 Palms. So don't worry, you got lots of creature comforts waiting for you. It's gonna start with a live set from Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Tickets are $20. You can get them off our website or wherever we've probably got it posted all over social media. But just go to desertoracle.com and click events. There's really nothing better than sitting in a dark theater under the air conditioners during our long summer purgatory. Thank you for listening to the program. Keep yourself cool. Dogs, too, you know. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Is that a tank rolling up our road? I hope not. As a reminder, these are classic episodes, so any events Ken mentioned are long in the past. Now, he has released a recent episode, but at the time of this recording, it was not yet available on the Radio Dropbox website, where he makes these episodes available to community radio. However, as soon as I can get it on the air, I will be playing it for you, hopefully next week. My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you for listening and supporting KGVM. And there's a jet flying over. Okay. We will be talking about UFOs later this summer. Do you have a story to tell? You can leave me a voicemail or text about that or anything on your mind at 406-404-6246. This program is broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, and it streams online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. See you next week, and stay safe on the trails, okay?